Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is Westchester on the Level with your host, Hezzy Eris.
Good morning, everybody. Well, today is Monday, the 10th of July. I can't believe how far we've gone. Already a half a year into this year, which is unbelievable. It looks like we do have a caller on the line. I'm not sure who it may be, but maybe they're on. And if not, we'll say hello, good morning to whoever the caller is. And I guess maybe when they return back to their phone, they'll recognize that we're on and that they'll be able to engage us. So let's look at some of the issues that we wanted to cover today. A lot of it is basically, so it's an introduction for a lot of people. We usually have guests on Monday. Every day we have different guests. Some are on a regular basis. Some are just unique on not one particular day for whatever reason. But because of my illness, I just wasn't sure if I would have the strength to do a complete 2 hours. So rather than to disappoint our regular guests on Monday, I figured let me just work on what we have here that we've already posted on our website and other concerns and so on and so forth. And this way we don't have to disappoint anybody. And other than my needing to apologize to all our listeners who are on the line at any given time. Okay, so let's start with a couple of things that are, I think, are of interest. One is about the Ultimate Student Loan Guide, which I wrote calling Making Sense of Student Loan Forgiveness, dated on the 7th of July, if you didn't read it online. So completing your education can be a huge deal, like a significant milestone in your life. It can also come with its fair share of challenges, especially when those student loans hang over your head, and paying off those loans can sometimes feel like a never-ending journey. So luckily, the government has developed different programs to help ease the burden and make things easier. They're all about trying to relieve some of that student loan stress. So what is student loan forgiveness? So student loan forgiveness means specific individuals can avoid paying back some or all of their federal debt. And these borrowers took out loans to pay for their education after high school, and it's important to know that not all types of debt qualify for forgiveness. Typically, those who work in public service, education, or the military are eligible for this benefit. Now, there are types of forgiveness programs. One, for example, is the Public Service Loan Forgiveness, PSLF. It's available for people who work for the government or a nonprofit organization. And in that case, this excellent public service forgiveness loan, they call it actually Public Service Loan Forgiveness, PSLF program, could help you. Gaining a complete understanding of every program can be your guide to student loan forgiveness. To qualify, you must make the needed qualifying payments, 120, which while working full-time for an eligible company. It would be best if you also were using a qualifying repayment plan. So PSLF will wipe out the remaining debt on your direct loans. It's like a sweet reward for your hard work and dedication. Then you've got the teacher loan forgiveness. To qualify, teach full-time for 5 consecutive years in a low-income elementary, secondary, or specific educational agency. You may qualify for debt forgiveness of up to $17,500 on your direct debit or FFEL program loans. It's like a special reward for your hard work and commitment to teaching in areas that need it. So keep making a difference in those classrooms and watch that debt disappear. There are also other options for dealing with student loan debts. Many individuals have also tried consolidation for their student debts. It's like acquiring a new loan to pay for your outstanding loans. And there are many ways to deal with student debt, and you must choose wisely. You've got the income-driven repayment forgiveness. Here's the scoop on income-driven repayment plans for your student loans. And these plans make your monthly payments more reasonable by considering your income and family size. Any remaining loan balance might be forgiven after paying for a specific period, which is usually 20 or 25 years. But remember that you might have to pay taxes on the forgiven amount. It's like a tailored repayment plan with the potential for some relief, though taxes may still come into play. Then you got the borrower's defense to repayments. Suppose your school broke the rules and didn't meet its obligations. In that case, you might qualify for loan discharge through, quote, borrower defense to repayment, end quote. It means you could get your loan discharged because of the school's actions. The specific condition for qualifying for borrower defense to repayment discharge depend on when you took out your loan. So it's essential to understand the rules that apply to your situation. It's like a way to seek relief if the school didn't hold up its end of the bargain. Then you got the unpaid refund discharge. If your school kept your loan money after you dropped out, quote, unpaid refund discharge, end quote, could help you get loan forgiveness. You might qualify to get the portion of your federal student loan that the school didn't return discharged. It's like getting back the money that should have been sent back to the loan servicer when you left school. So the difference between forgiveness, cancellation, and discharge, this has to be understood. When it comes to student loans, forgiveness, cancellation, and discharge are similar terms used in different situations. If your work makes you exempt from loan payments, it's called forgiveness or cancellation. If other circumstances like disability or school closure excuse your dues, it's called discharge. The bottom line, student loan forgiveness is an option the government gives to lighten the burden of student debt. There are a lot of programs that could help you with forgiveness. It's best to choose what is most convenient for you. And that is the name of the game. So that's something to think about. Then I see there is still the caller on the line. They're probably just listening, and that's fine. So bear with me a moment, because all I could see on my studio screen is that a call is waiting in the section where I could hear them if they ever spoke. Okay, but until they speak, there's nothing I could hear. Okay, now let's look at some other things that you may find of interest. Bear with me a moment, because I've got to go to each of the articles. this you'll find interesting. Again, we're going to try to cover as much local news first. The city of Poughkeepsie evidently settled a civil rights suit for $400,000 with teenage sisters captured on viral video being brutalized. Are you sitting down for this? By police officers. And this was written by William O. Wagstaff III, Esquire. It seems that this was published by us on the 7th of July. But after four harrowing years, the city of Poughkeepsie has finally ended the nightmare caused by the unlawful and excessive actions of officers John Williams and Kevin Van Wagner. While no amount of money will erase the trauma Jamelia and Jerisa endured, it is the family's prayer that this settlement sends a resounding message to the community that police misconduct impacts not just the victims, but costs the taxpayers. Until police officers are disciplined, the lawyer writes, and terminated when appropriate for wrongful actions and meaningful police reforms are demanded by the citizenry, resources that would be better used for youth programs, senior support, or effective safety initiatives will continue to be allocated to covering the tab for bad actors. So the family looks forward to closing this challenging chapter of their lives. They thank the courageous elected officials who have been vocal throughout the ordeal and the community for their unwavering support. Seems the family acknowledges the great debt of gratitude owed to activists, students, religious leaders, and concerned citizens who fought alongside them and know that the debt can never truly be repaid. So, and there are attachments such as that speak to the excessive force that is recognized via a viral video. And there's also a settlement press release that was issued as well. So that's something to think about if it's of concern and of interest. Now, let's look at some other things that are here. Bear with me a moment here. 1 second. Okay. Okay, and this also very important. Attorney General James Law Enforcement Misconduct Investigative Office released a report on Saugerties police officer. Seems that the New York State Attorney General Letitia James Law Enforcement Misconduct Investigative Office, LEMIO, on the 7th of July released its report on multiple complaints filed against Saugerties Police Department. So bear with me a moment because I see a caller came in. Good morning, caller. Hello.
Good morning, Hezzy. John Bailey here.
Oh, John, how are you? I didn't invite people for this particular broadcast because I was afraid I didn't have the strength to do it all. But, you know, if you're already calling, no problem. I was just embarrassed to disappoint people if I ran out of juice. So how are you and good morning?
That's okay.
What a pleasure
I just wanted to check in. I'm doing fine. And how are you doing? You sound good to me.
I'm feeling very, very good. I'm walking a great deal and trying to do as much exercise as possible, and that's helping me a great deal. And today I felt I could really actually do 2 hours. But, you know, again, it's just a question of not, trying not to disappoint, you know, the people that would normally be on. So if I lasted 2 hours today, then I'll be on the rest of the week, no problem. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. It's been a very strange week of news, and particularly the absolute floods that have swamped the New York metropolitan area above Westchester County. I mean, I was stunned about the governor's declaring an emergency late last night, and also rather stunned that we got 14 inches of rain, and nobody was talking about 14 inches of rain Saturday.
No, not at all.
No.
You know, weather is still elusive, and even though we think, just because we get a weather report, even though there are different services all over the place, they don't always get it right, even when they're right on top of it. So it's just amazing. We still don't know a lot of stuff. It's like science, and it's beyond our scope at the moment. We think we know, but we don't know.
Well, when I usually go up that way towards Yorktown on a Sunday or a Saturday to visit my son, and I was planning on going yesterday, but the forecast and the radar, which if you using your iPhone, you can see radar as of the moment, which convinced me, since there was a lot of red over the Hudson, that I shouldn't go up there and drive my son around, and, you know, because of simply traffic accidents. The traffic was or not very well enforced on the Taconic Parkway, high speeds at all times. You have to look both directions as you're driving. But so I didn't go, and I was fortunate. Apparently, it just rained cats and dogs in the early afternoon, but it got worse as the night wore on, and then Orange County is apparently almost impassable, and we're supposed to get more today.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, this is just a surprise.
If people go to the White Plains Citizen.net reporter, website, WPCNR.com, you have a phenomenal article which spoke to the 8 inches of rain and the emergency in Orange County. And you did a phenomenal article about it, about Swift Water Rescue Team and the emergency operations.
Yeah, but that was the governor's announcement. I didn't write that, but I salute her for acting so quickly.
It was pertinent. Yeah. And there's some great ideas here, you know, about carrying a flashlight and batteries. And a lot of people don't have this. And you would think that, you know,
absolutely,
it's never quite safe. You need to have all this on you in the car. That's what it's all about. And I don't know why people are not prepared. So
we become complacent, and
I've been complacent too. Yeah. I used to drive as well. Now I don't drive because of my heart condition. But the bottom line, when I drove, I don't think I was always ready for an eventuality like this, which could happen at any moment. You never know.
Yes. Not only that, but you always have to contemplate, you know, at our advanced ages, a sudden incapacity provoked by a health emergency, and the ability to know what to do if you feel yourself fading out. I always try and drive on the right side, the right lane of the highway, so I can just pull over if I feel myself fading. I just came up with that thought right now. And the other problem is persons should not drive into standing water, which has created a lot of the emergency rescue conditions the governor referred to last night.
Yeah.
And but these floods, I was looking at some video on the Weather Channel, which it's amazing they send people out and they get this stuff. That is just major, major stuff. I mean, streets turned into rivers. Palisades Parkway washed out. Please, Palisades Parkway is a major route. And absolutely no information on Westchester closing. Around 10 o'clock this morning as far as streets go. But, I mean, we have to have better traffic emergency notifications. We just do.
Absolutely.
There was nothing aside from the governor's, aside from the governor's release at 10 o'clock last night, there was no information this morning as to the effect of the roads in Westchester County. Now, we did get a lot of rain, but to my way of thinking, we have so much communications in Westchester that so they should be a little more coordinated and a little more timely sensitive.
Well, you know what it is, John? I think you're quite right about that, and I think it would be much more impactful if we didn't have to read all these different notices from different offices. But at the end of the day, everybody wants to get their face in the news, their name in the news, and so everyone is doing, they want to be the first one on the scene, so to speak. And so everyone's vying for attention, whether it be the local government or the county government or the state government or the federal government, and it goes on and on and on. And
with the elected
and that's just like, it's like the newspaper business.
Yeah. Go ahead. But the newspaper is the least read.
Yeah, absolutely. That's correct.
You can't get a newspaper, and when it arrives, it's about 8 hours late, 8 hours behind.
Well, but isn't that the beauty of what we operate? We don't have a print newspaper. We never began as a print paper, and we always moved toward the internet, and I think a lot of people didn't recognize the instant response, because by the time we finished our article, it was up and running, and it was faster than a newspaper, because the newspaper wouldn't get it up there till either the evening, if it's an evening paper, or the following morning. So they were out of date. We were already on. So people, that's why I think a lot of people gravitated to the online, and they stayed away from the print. It's unbelievable.
Yes, the secret to being to doing a online service is you have to change it frequently.
Correct.
In other words, you have
absolutely
to new stuff at least 3 times a day. That's why
absolutely
people visit my site 3 times a day. Those that,
yep.
And I'm stunned by that. And what that means is that you've got to get the news as it happens. And it is intriguing to me that, I mean, the governor realizes that and puts it out.
Well, exactly. I think she's mimicking the type of conduct that the former governor, Cuomo, had engaged in, and he was really quite out there and in a very timely manner. And I think he got a good name for it, despite, you know, however he left. But the bottom line is she's done a bang-up job when it comes to that. She's always out there. She's in your face in a good way. And I think that's
yes,
terrific.
And
that's what we need in government.
And she has ignored the obstacles that the state Senate and the state assembly has put in her way. They have humiliated her by their actions and continued to take the bait.
Unbelievable.
She has not lost her temper about it. She has.
No.
And she has just gone on and she does things more than they do.
Exactly.
I haven't heard anything of either of those two leaders in a couple of weeks. And
absolutely.
Why? Because they don't know what to do.
Exactly.
Now, right. Now, the big thing here with the state is this business with our migrants, you know, that have come in from outside New York. And right now, we've only received about 400 migrants in 3 locations in Westchester. And I'm wondering, why aren't we receiving more? Why aren't we receiving more?
I don't know how they allocate it, and I don't even know where one would get an answer to that, because a lot of it is, it's a question of an embarrassment.
It's embarrassing that the New York Times can write a story about all our shelters are filled up, about 100,000 people within the New York City limits with the homeless, as well as the migrants. And we're sitting up here and we're only housing 400 in Westchester. I mean, where are the other organizations in the county that could help out? Churches, for example. Where are the churches in all this?
They do what they do, but the point is that there is still a tremendous amount of resentment of this population. But once the nation allows people to come across the border and then they're permitted to travel across the United States, at that point we become responsible for them. And, you know, that's the whole point, to find them a place so they could settle and hopefully get them a job or whatever, or train them for something. And that becomes a responsibility. But, you know, Westchester County and a lot of other places outside of New York City are not doing the job that they're supposed to do. We talk a good game, but we don't deliver. You're right.
Well,
where are the houses of worship? I don't get it. I really don't get it.
They have. I mean, what is intriguing to me is they have.
Can't hear you, John.
Or pressuring the Biden administration.
John, can't hear you. You're not near your phone.
Okay, how's that? Is that better?
Okay, much better. Thank you. Yes, sir.
That's better. Yes, the Assembly and the State Senate have been absolutely mum on this whole issue as to whether they support Governor Hochul and and George Latimer's asking for an interim asylum adjudication court to be installed by the Homeland Security Department, and also the ability to let the migrants work.
And, well, that's a question I've got to ask you. What are we doing about the Westchester County center? Nobody gets housed there. Why aren't
you? You mean the county center?
Yeah, isn't that interesting?
They are staging events there, okay, when they could actually put the migrants in the lower floor of the basement of the county center, which is quite spacious, and nobody has even volunteered that. They could have, during the week, when the county center isn't used, they could put 4,000 in there.
Yeah, that's it. What's really interesting is they can sit out the county center for a particular event, whatever that event is, and at the end of the day, they need to take it down so that people can reside there through the night, and then they have to be out by a certain time so that they could set up for the following day, whatever the place is, and that could work. You know, they don't need to sleep there all day.
We can whisk them various jobs, and then they'd have been constructive and feel good. And it's 5 weeks now. It's obvious they're not going to do anything.
The other problem too is they create animosity when people come across the border and are allowed to come in and arrive in our community as well as in others throughout the nation. And yet there are people who reside here, who live here, who were born here, who may not have the education or the expertise and are not employed and they're not getting the same benefits, in a sense, to become integrated into the community as far as employees in whatever field that they can be engaged in or trained into. And I think that that's a failure. And it causes animosity, and it causes a failure in our policy. And I don't know why we have to go there, why we can't do a better job.
I would say so. There's something else I was kind of upset with.
Can't hear you again. I don't know what you're doing with your phone.
I was sort of upset with something else the Biden administration didn't do. And they have not thought out a policy towards these immigrants at all.
No, I don't think it has not been clearly thought out.
No.
And nobody seems to have challenged it.
Well, this is seems to be a mark of these huge government bureaucracies. They do policies. They don't punish.
John, I really wish you could do something with your phone. Can you come in and out? So I don't know what you're doing with your phone. That's better.
Okay, let me.
So what did you say?
Let me.
Well, so what haven't they done that you were suggesting? Or what did you just say? Couldn't hear you.
Well, what they have not done is they have not thought out plans for how they're going to handle certain things. I mean, when we have the fentanyl problem, and the Sackloffs have been absolutely yet to keep their money after a certain settlement, and they have created thousands of deaths by their marketing of products, which they knew was dangerous, and they didn't tell people about it.
Listen, it's a two-way street. You know what? Yes, they were 100% wrong, and the government, when they realized that what they were doing was they were pushing these drugs, which only hurt people or ended up getting them habituated to these drugs, and they became addicts one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
Some didn't, but many did. And the point is the government is the one that's failing here. They should be fined. And you know what? They need even to be shut down for this sort of conduct, if that's what it takes.
They
I have
should
no
just
problem.
Say put, she would put that firm out of business.
Exactly.
That's
and then it can be used as an example that if this is the sort of business that you're involved in, you're going to be out of business because we'll put you out of business. And you know what, though?
Mm-hmm.
We could do that to the sackcloths, and at the same time, we could also do it to all the drug dealers that are doing that here in the United States. You can't tell me that they don't know who's getting the stuff into the country, how it's coming in, and how it's being distributed. There's no reason we have all this crime. There's no reason whatsoever. None. This is the biggest con game
they
going.
They are, the DEA has failed to control drugs in this country ever since I can remember when there was a DEA.
That's correct.
They failed.
I agree.
And every administration has failed at controlling the drug problem. And it's just the way it is. However, it's become a way of life, a way of business.
Because they're making money. They're making money.
Yes, evidently, they're making
the
money.
The government must
right.
be making money. Somebody's making money
right.
off of this. And it's not just the drug dealers and the people who are pushing this stuff. Who knows how much the Sackcloth people pay off?
It was a couple of billion, I think. It was really a fantastic
Wouldn't
company.
Doubt it.
But it's been a while.
Wouldn't doubt it.
I've just forgotten about it. And now the other thing is the Boeing company, which made 3 aircraft, crash because of their software negligence. And that company is still in business. They're still allowing the plane to be made.
But you know what's interesting?
I mean,
it's a very good point. It's just a very good point that you've made, except Boeing is supposed to test their planes. And but it comes to a government organization to prove that they're correct in their presumption about the efficacy and the safety of that vehicle, which evidently somebody in government has failed to do. So the question is, who's responsible? Not only the oversight department that's supposed to check this out, because they have the expertise to check it out, but who knows, maybe they look the other way. So again, we've got a problem.
Well, it seems to be that Boeing is not getting any punishment, but not only their leaders who okay these decisions are not facing any charges, and they had not one but 3 planes crash because of this problem. Now, they must have known it at the first plane crash. And then so how come they didn't ground the flights? Period.
Well, because
the
they
lost billions.
The federal government and big business want to protect this business that's a big exporter of planes, and they try to satisfy the buyers, whoever they are, wherever they are. But in the meantime, you give it another 5 to 10 years, Boeing will be out of business. The more planes that they crash, and the Chinese and other companies will take over. And then they're all going to be crying because our technology will be waning and everybody else's will be exploding in a positive way. And this is the stupidity of our formula. It doesn't work. And you know what? You don't have to shut them
down.
Well,
the regulators
you need to force
have,
the regulators to do the job.
Yes, the regulators have very close relationships with the lobbyists for whom they regulate in
well,
industries
the
that they regulate.
The federal
it's
government
buddy.
Knows
it's
that.
It's a buddy system.
The federal government knows that, but the bottom line is, what about the idiots that are suing, and they how come they don't go after that? The point is, you don't just sue Boeing. You sue Boeing, and you sue the organization, which is government, that is supposed to oversee it. It's supposed to be an oversight committee,
right.
and that's the government's responsibility. If the government doesn't do that, then you know that's the whole point. That's what a lawsuit is all about. The only way you can remedy this stuff. And I don't care if
Absolutely.
It's going to cost Boeing billions of dollars. You could have done it the right way in the first place. Because they don't make mistakes.
Well, why can't people do things the right way in the first place? Why do they cut
because
corners?
They're saving.
This is so typical of what causes accidents. Now, another issue is this problem of railroad accidents. I was reading just recently that they've come up with a new train engine that will haul freight much faster and on tracks. This engine is supposedly going to be a real boon to moving freight faster. Now, you know, that's, you know, coast to coast and all that. Big
yeah.
money saver. Now, the problem is we have had a very serious derailments on tanker trains that go long distances,
right.
and they're very odd accidents. They like a wheel overheats and it derails in the middle of the train. They go all over the place,
right.
and the tankers release whatever they have. Now, in
right.
the old days, when in the railroad unions were the kingpins, you had to have at least three persons on a freight or any. And what they did was they stayed in the caboose and they walked the freight cars from up top, checking for possible hot spots on the wheels. That, and they also braked the trains back in the real old days when there were no air brakes. But when they eliminated the brakemen and the caboose and the inspections of the train as was moving by the brakemen who would go along the walks, very dangerous job. But that's how they prevented wheel malfunctions. But
yeah,
they eliminated
But what you're basically saying is that they took the cheaper way and they got rid of a lot of employees, saved a lot of money, and that's what they did. Again, we got a weak government at that time that permitted that, rather than to say, sorry, guys, we need this from a safety perspective, and that's what we're going to do. And if you can't function with a greater expense, then don't use the train. Do it any other way you want.
Yeah.
So, and they would have no other
They also eliminated the firemen when diesels came along. And the problem was the fireman was there in case something happened to the engineer.
Correct. That's right.
I would know of no accidents where that was a factor, but I'm just saying that when the fireman wasn't needed, he was eliminated. But he was like a co-pilot. He knew how to run the train. I could never understand that decision.
It was a question of saving money, and they figured they don't need them because they didn't need them every day. Maybe it would be once a year. But the point is that once a year incident would be catastrophic if they weren't there. And that's what they're trying to save. But again,
we had an accident like that whereby, we in Westchester County, we had a fatal commuter accident on a train heading to Spuyten Duyvil. And when he hit the engineer of the train, one man fell asleep and didn't slow down, and that's what caused the accident.
Exactly.
And there is a point to having someone always with the engineer. It's like that's why we have co-pilots, navigators.
Well, that's the whole point, isn't it? Because if you had somebody there, it would cost more money for that second individual to watch and to be there, except that the cost of that derailment in Spuyten Duyvil probably cost them more than to hold on to that second employee that would have been there to step in.
The cost of safety is dear. The cost of safety is dear, and nobody really cares about that if you could make more money by cutting back on safety features or cautionary steps or really thinking perhaps better
because
training
people,
of pilots
people,
on the software. Who knows?
Yeah,
who knows?
People salivate because you're going to save a couple of bucks, but in the meantime, when there's death, they don't seem to care one way or the other. Okay, so a few people
sure.
died, so what? But it's cheaper. Oh,
right.
That's insane. Speaking of death,
now the other issue.
What's the other issue?
Well, the idea and the discovery last week that the Earth is turning, it's tilting on its axis very sharply.
I didn't know about that. I wasn't aware of
that
at all.
Yes, it was an accident that the Earth's axis is shifting, and the reason is that too much water is being extracted from the ground, thus unbalancing the Earth's ballast, so to speak. And
oh,
so, therefore,
I had not
it's
realized
wobbling.
That.
Now,
uh-huh.
What is intriguing about the article, as this appeared on June 29th, not too long ago, in the Times,
uh-huh.
And the interesting thing about it is that no one asked the question, well, what happens if this continues to happen? Can the Earth do the spinning out of control top thing? You know, when you had a top, got it spinning,
mm-hmm.
it would eventually fall because it stopped its momentum. So the question is this something that we really have to pay attention to right away? And what will happen if this continues? Nobody addressed that question in the article. That's the big question in the article. What does this mean? You know?
Well,
what does this mean for humanity?
It seems to me that if we are somehow extracting water from the Earth, that's probably going to cause the change in the axis of the Earth, and it may spin differently and will therefore change the weather patterns all over the world. And who knows what that's going to cause. And so you got all kinds of issues. If there's a lack of water in certain parts of the Earth, that means somebody's taking out the water. So why aren't we desalinating water and putting it back in? I don't get it. What's the problem?
Yeah, big letter in the Times about that this morning.
Uh-huh,
so much
really.
Sense is made by letter writers to the Times, and you should be doing some of your reporting. But
absolutely.
Now, the heat wave in the West, I mean, a couple of weeks ago, I wrote an article saying these weather forecasts are so wrong that I'm stopping doing the weather on the site. And since then, we've had terrible weather. And it's not a laughing matter. But, I mean, weather is important, but you need to get more advanced warning on these things. They got to get a better handle. How can 15 inches of rain fall and nobody knew it was coming? Because they never said. They were saying maybe we might get heavy rain, but they didn't say how heavy.
Because it's not an exact science, and so you can't think of it as a science. They tend to be able to measure the direction and the scope of the rain or whatever else is going to, or the snow, whatever's going to happen, but they get it wrong because they don't have the dynamics to get it right. And we're very
I think the women forecasters on the Weather Channel get it right. The males always get it wrong.
Well, then, you know, women always get it
That's
right.
That's a terrible
and always
terribly
get it wrong.
Terribly judgmental thing.
Well,
I'm
you know,
making somewhat of a joke.
Women are on the mark, and the men have other issues. I don't know what the issues are. Maybe I'm in touch with my feminine side as well as my male side, so I try to balance that out. But I think the women don't have to worry about that so much, so they're probably more on target than the men are. It's part
of life. Harris, fair and balanced.
You know, I wanted to ask you about something else. I remember years and years ago, and this was written at the White Plains Citizen Net Reporter, the WPCNR.com website. So you wrote about the passing of all people of Richard Cerulli. He was an executive, philosopher, playwright, novelist, And unfortunately, he passed away. And he was one of the first people that was a regular on my show maybe 25 years ago. And somehow or another,
really?
He changed jobs and we lost touch because he couldn't come on the show anymore. But I loved him to pieces, and I saw a lot of his works. He used to write articles. I haven't looked up the name Cerulli in such a long time, that I'd forgotten. So thank you for noticing, unfortunately, his funeral that took place on July 8th. So I just didn't
well,
realize
it was
amazing. Great guy. Wonderful man.
Yeah. He was a true Renaissance man. He was a college professor. He had 2 doctorates.
Mm-hmm.
He was amazing, had amazing thirst for knowledge, quite creative, wrote a couple of novels, turned one into a play.
Very creative.
And his philosophy was existentialism.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
I had often felt I was somewhat existential myself because existentialism makes you responsible for your own fate.
Right.
Yes, you can't depend. You have to depend on your own performance, which is something that not too many philosophies do. But
exactly.
I mean, the Greeks did. But I love Plato. I mean, the Plato dialogues are just incredible adventures in reason and in argument, and not too many politicians, Plato.
No. Most people don't even know Plato.
No, because they would see themselves too often.
That's very true.
Cerulli was a very nice guy. He was very... And he was always going to the next project. Then he was creating to the end. He did a movie.
You know what's interesting?
He also
did some plays. He did some plays as well.
Yes, he did.
So he wrote stuff. He was a really exceptional man. Really the original Renaissance man that I, one of the first I ever met. But you know what else? I didn't realize he was born 2 years, exactly 2 years, 2.5 years earlier than I, or rather later than I. And, it's getting frightening, you know, when you get up to a certain age. I'm like 73 and a half already, and he was younger than I. It's frightening. So, I don't worry about it. It's just that it's getting a little bit closer to home. I think when I was just really thinking about
well,
it too much.
Well, you know, it's difficult. It's difficult as you go older because you are the same mentally as you were when you were in your 20s, and you're the same person, and you've perhaps been working on your same flaws for 50 years as I am.
Correct.
And each time when you hit your birthday, you figure, well, I'm going to be better this year. And you do occasionally improve yourself. We're working on old habits are hard to get rid of. And,
Very, very much.
But it's important.
But
sometimes
but the
you can't be too hard on yourself.
Your loved
just
ones,
have to try.
Your loved ones are concerned, and they help you find your way. So sometimes that's a great help. Or your friends, whatever. So that's always cool. Very, very good to know.
Exactly.
Unbelievable. Oh, John, I got to ask
and
you.
My
that,
search,
you always did such a bang.
What?
And you search what?
Yeah. What was the question?
I was wondering, you know, you covered the COVID crisis, and now then there's another Omicron derivative that's coming out as well. And I do understand that the numbers are getting bigger again. So is it because they tell us to take off the masks and stuff like that? Are people wearing the masks?
Well,
I
see
people
very
wearing
few.
Masks very much.
Nobody's masking now. Nobody is masking.
No.
Now.
Right.
So they are ripe for this next variant that comes down the pike, and the biggest problem we face is the fact that the next edition of the vaccine, which we're told is going to come this fall by the government, we're going to have to pay for it.
Uh-huh. Wow.
And now when it's free, we do not have a fully vaccinated population in the state of New York. People have stopped getting their boosters because they think it's safe, because no politician is, filing off anything that remotely tells them it's not safe.
Mm-hmm.
They aren't getting the shots. And this, I think if there is a stronger variant, and it's not going to be pretty because the numbers are going to go up. In fact, in June, we had, in June, if I can pull it out up here. In June, we had 826 new cases of COVID in Westchester County, around Westchester alone. And then, so if that, right now, COVID is holding its own. We're not going down, and we're not going up substantially. And the 926 may very well, if one of those spreads it to another person, then you're going to get another 900 cases in July, which is a lot less than the 10,000, a lot less than the 10,000 we had last July. But it depends, because right now we're in the socializing season, the beach season, the concert season, and new Broadway shows are opening, and that's something to think about. But right now thanks to the vaccines, we have a sort of COVID thing back to one, spreading it to one, which means you're not stamping it out. It's staying viable.
Yeah, exactly. I want to ask you, because
still
of
viable.
The time frame, George Latimer could run again, I think. I think he served, two terms? But he promised...
This is his last term, and I think they adopted it to limit it to two terms. But they can just change it if he wants to stay in office. That's what Mayor Bloomberg did, and nobody saw anything wrong with that.
Except that Mayor Bloomberg was exceptional, and even though the county executive is also exceptional, however, it was promised that Ken Jenkins would succeed him after his two-term time frame. So I don't think that I can't imagine that the county executive is going to want to run another term. But does he have an opportunity to run for something different other than on the county level, maybe on the state level?
He has three opportunities. He could challenge for Gillibrand's Senate seat in Washington.
Good point.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think he would win that, bringing the voice of the people to Washington, become another Jimmy Stewart, and he doesn't need a script like Stewart did. But at any rate, that's what he could do. He could also run for Congress.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
He could run for a congressional seat. But a congressman is one of, 426? You have no power.
Yeah.
And, you're just picking up free health care and among other things, and all sorts of perks. Lobbyists give things. I can't see Latimer doing that because he's an action guy. So, he could challenge Senator Schumer. But I think Schumer is in for another couple of years, isn't he?
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
But he's slowing down.
You never know.
He's
People might be tired of Schumer, but he's got such tremendous power that to discharge him
as a
challenger wouldn't work.
A thought crossed my mind. Schumer could be the presidential nominee.
Hmm.
That's conceivable, because
I don't know if Biden's got the capacity to hold out when it comes to the reelection process. I think he's getting old. Aren't we all? But
that's why I
don't know if he's got the stamina to do it.
Well, that's why Janet Yellen went to China.
Yeah, absolutely. She did a bad job. I thought she was phenomenal.
China's leader thinks Biden is weak.
Taiwan. Yeah. But she did a phenomenal job being there. And I thought she was very, very, she expressed herself very well. And look, China is the second largest economy in the world. They're concerned that America doesn't permit them to have the latest technology as far as chip development. And so it is. That's one of the reasons probably China wants to take over Taiwan.
If you let them have it, you lose your right to it.
Yeah, exactly. So that but
I
again,
mean, nobody gives up anything.
The stupidity of the fact that we have the most sophisticated plant for computer chip technology is on Taiwan is outrageous. Why it's not here is because some asshole, excuse the French, wanted to save a couple of bucks because it was cheaper to build it there. However, it's not secure for us over here. And you know what?
I did not know that.
Absolutely.
That hasn't been pointed out in the press.
Well, that's because a lot of people don't point out a lot of stuff in the press. You point out stuff that isn't in the press, and that's what makes you so unique. The point is that the latest technology, the most technology in the world is on Taiwan, and that's one of the reasons they want it. And what we should be doing it, to be honest with you, is taking it away from Taiwan and moving the whole place back to the United States.
That's important. On the other hand, what will happen is if Taiwan is attacked, we should just destroy that plant. That's what we need to do. So we should be replacing it.
We're not going to get into a war over it. The point is if they want to take it over, there's no way we're going to be able to stop it. And we don't have the equipment.
This administration has been devoid of really smart people heading up all the departments.
The previous
administration was any better, but I mean the top management of the various departments of government should be thinking about this.
I think that they
haven't been. If you're thinking about it, I mean, are they? They must be.
They must be
but
thinking
God,
about
I
it.
Hope
it's
so.
Not that. I mean, I'm smart, but I'm not the most brilliant guy in the room. And then, more importantly, the point is they have more information than I do, and therefore they can take a more intuitive and more educated position, and they should be planning for it. But there's no way to plan. If China wants Taiwan, it will be theirs. Same thing goes for the Philippines. And they're claiming, the Chinese are claiming all the islands off their shore. And yeah. it just is what it is. And there's no way for us to protect it. You know? I don't know what we're going to do.
Somebody should know what to do, and somebody is thinking about this in the Biden administration, as you just laid out. So to my way of thinking, they don't seem to have action plans for what if and all that. The immigrants are nothing new. They did not sort this out for the last two years. So we're now suffering because they didn't design a policy. They also are very unwilling to make any acts. I mean, when DeSantis first sent the first bus up to Martha's Vineyard or the plane, whatever, that should have been stopped. Biden should have said, you can't do that. He just should have done it. And then they can take it to court.
Court,
and that would stop that. But he didn't do that. He allowed Abbott to do that, which has created tremendous problems in New York, metropolitan area, and elsewhere. He allowed that.
Exactly.
He didn't take them and move them back into Texas. He should have had the military escort them back into Texas and order the governor to house them. With aid, of course.
So,
but he didn't do that because he didn't have the guts.
Well, that's the problem. It's problematic.
He would have gained
both. And we should have a plan in advance. And there shouldn't be.
He didn't.
You shouldn't. Well, that's the issue. So why don't we have
the same thing happened. This is very reminiscent of the way he handled the Afghan withdrawal, which was a disgrace.
Absolutely. That's right.
They weren't ready.
That's correct.
It was like the Saigon lifting them off the helicopters on the rooftop.
Yeah.
You know?
And what about all the equipment
that
we left
behind?
We
weren't ready for that either.
It cost billions and billions of dollars. What is it? What was that left there for? For what reason? No reason for that at all. It's like a gift? Really? In the meantime, women don't even have a right to walk the streets. They don't. Yeah. They don't allow them to be employed. Women are being pushed to the curb, and they're being hurt in the process. Is this what we wasted our time there for? Unbelievable! Unbelievable!
They spent 50,000 American lives for nothing.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
Nothing.
It's outrageous.
I hate to say that, but that's bottom line. It's like Vietnam.
The same thing.
All those lives lost.
Yeah.
And. Military.
Why did we even get involved in Vietnam? Vietnam was an issue for the French. The French were there before
the
we
Southeast
arrived.
Southeast Asia Treaty Organization was the excuse for that. Yes. Vietnam was a member of FICO, as it was known that. And because we were a member and we pledged to protect them, that's why we went in. And grew our commitments, and the military kept saying, "We got this," but they didn't.
Yeah, except they never did.
No, they never did. And Johnson felt he should do this to uphold our treaties.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to say we would stand up to the Russians in NATO or something like that. I mean, it was all done in the future. We have to do this so we don't have to do this later. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not a space person, but you could see it. But the other thing, I mean, that Afghan withdrawal was just awful. It means they had never planned for it. And they really didn't care what happened. They should have been bussing them out beforehand. I mean, it looked to me like the Afghan withdrawal was just decided to do so on the spur of the moment. And Biden himself, set the deadline when to be out. You never do that. You never tell, we're going to leave on this date, you know. Because then you'll get attacked on that day. You planned for
I guess the real problem is that I don't think Biden decided that on his own. And I think that the generals are the ones that made the mistake and probably pressured him to do it one way as opposed to another. And that was the issue, because we never got a resolution of who planned all of this stuff. It just happened.
No.
And it was the biggest disaster in the world.
It really was a bungle.
The nation. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, John, unfortunately, we've gone over our time, but as usual, scintillating discussion with you, always cutting edge, and I want to thank you again for your engagement on the broadcast.
Well, it's great to be back on
always
the air with you, Hezzy. It's great to be back on the air with you, Hezzy.
Well, thank you.
You were strong today. You're clear thinking as ever, and I think that Taiwan chip plant is a very interesting issue. Watch. That'll be in the time
really
in a couple of days. Yes.
Absolutely. Well, listen, give my best
well,
to Brenda.
Well, everybody.
Here.
Welcome
your
back, Hezzy Harris. And take care of yourself,
Hezzy.
Thank
you so much, John.
Press on.
Be well.
Press on.
We'll be in touch.
Right. Bye for now.
You too. Take care. Stay healthy. Goodbye.
Go on. Bye-bye.
Oh, it doesn't get better than John Bailey, White Plains CitizenNet reporter, publisher. Find him at WPCNR.com, which stands for White Plains CitizenNet reporter, WPCNR.com. Always a fantastic guest, and he writes a phenomenal website. He focuses on White Plains, naturally, which is the county capital. And Yonkers is my turf. Yonkers is the third largest city in the state of New York. And so we cover different aspects of importance in the county always fascinating how things are somehow gel and interline and intermingle. And there's just so many beautiful things that take place, and the diversity of Westchester County is really phenomenal, and it gives everyone an opportunity, if they get to know Westchester County, that there is a place for them to live and to reside and to flourish because of the demeanor of so many of these communities. They all have a different sense about them. It's not Westchester County and it means one thing. It doesn't. Because there's White Plains, there's Yonkers, there's Bronxville, there's Mount Vernon, there's Ossining. Every imaginable place, as Scarsdale, New Rochelle, and on and on and on, Mount Vernon, however you look at it, it's just phenomenal, the sort of items that are out there. So let me just quickly look at a couple of other things which I think, or hopefully you'll find important. And what else did I want to get to over here? Yeah, I think you'll find this of interest too, speaking about Mount Vernon. I wanted to cover this. Mount Vernon, the city of Mount Vernon, has a special youth bureau, and they've got what they call a step-up summer academy. So the Step Up Summer Academy is a five-week program of fun and learning designed to help Mount Vernon's at-risk, quote-unquote, at-risk male population in grades 5 to 7 prepare for the future. So it's called Step Up Summer Academy, S-U-S-A. It's a great way to help youth develop leadership, social, and communication skills, become self-sufficient, and build self-esteem through unique methods of mentoring and self-assessment. So the program believes in shaping the youth of today for a better tomorrow. So why do we say this? Because the program is valid from today, July 10th, all the way through August 11th of 2023, Monday to Friday. Each participant, if you didn't know this, will receive a $300 stipend upon completion of the program. Base is limited. You could join in between 9 in the morning and 1 o'clock in the afternoon. You would need to go to the Grimes School, G-R-I-M-E-S, School at 58 South 10th Avenue in Mount Vernon, New York, 10550. you can register and contact Wayne Woodbury at woodbury@cmvny.com. And that's the website address, or the email address. So woodbury@cmvny.com, or you can call him at work at 914-840-4009. So in other words, the work number for Wayne Woodbury is 914 area code 840-4009, or you could leave him a cell message on his cell phone at 914-359-1438. So 914 for the cell, 359-1438. And just so you know, if you didn't know, the mayor is Sean Patterson Howard of Mount Vernon. The executive director is Debbie Burrell. And Debbie Burrell Butler, and the deputy director is Dina T. Williams. Now, you can go to the Yonkers Tribune website, and you will find this article. It's posted on July 7th under the title "City of Mount Vernon Youth Bureau Step Up Summer Academy." So, hopefully, there's still some room left that you might consider engaging. And wish you much success with regard to that. Now, let's look at some other things which hopefully you'll find of interest. Bear with me a moment as I try to cover some other items with you. One second. Where is it here? Yes, I think you'll find this really fascinating. This is an article written by Bronxville Mayor Mary Marvin Esquire. It's her column, and she says, "Today, as I walked by some of our very decorative storefronts festooned with red, white, and blue, it brought a smile of gratitude for our country and the desire to learn more about the origins of the 4th of July. So often forgotten in the equation, all of the men who signed the Declaration of Independence were truly brave Americans, as they were fully aware that when they penned their signature in Philadelphia, it was an act of treason, punishable by death. To a person, they were well-educated, propertied, and of considerable means and standing, who had much to lose. But as they said, quote, they valued liberty more, quote, unquote. Now, the famous John Hancock, wealthy merchant, governor of Massachusetts, and president of the Second Continental Congress, signed first and so, boldly so, the British ministry can read my name without spectacles. Spectacles was the old term for glasses. Every one of the 56 members of the Second Continental Congress who penned their signatures paid dearly. Nine died of wounds or hardship during the War of Independence. Five were in prison for decades. Five were captured as traitors and tortured and killed. Several had wives, sons, and even entire families killed. One signer lived to see all 13 of his children murdered. Every signer was a victim of manhunts with huge bounties on their heads. They lived on the run, leaving prosperous farms, shipping businesses, and law practices. 12 signers had their homes and property burned to ruins, and 17 lost everything, dying destitute, yet not one defected or went back on his pledged word. With poetic justice, on the 50th anniversary of their signing, Thomas Jefferson and John Adams died on the 4th of July within hours of each other, and 5 years to the day, James Madison also passed on the 4th. As FDR, Frank Delano Roosevelt, reminded us over 70 years ago on the holiday, quote, those of us who have long enjoyed such privileges as we enjoy today forget that men died to win them. Despite all the hardship endured, John Adams felt July 4 must be a festive occasion and wrote to Abigail that he wanted the 4th to be celebrated with pomp and parades, with shows, games, sports, bells, bonfires, and illuminations from one end of the continent to the other. We have certainly lived up to President Adams' wishes. On a lighter note, the 4th of July is the most popular day for barbecuing, and Americans spend $6.7 billion on food, the most popular food, not surprisingly, being the hot dog, as we will eat 150 million of them on Tuesday, the 4th of July, with about 86% of Americans planning to celebrate the holiday. The 4th is also one of the country's most prolific holidays for drinking, right up there with Super Bowl Sunday and St. Patrick's Day, with $3 billion spent on beer and wine alone. Around the holiday, Americans buy more than 6.5 million flags, with 99% of them made in China. $7 billion will be spent on fireworks, and not surprisingly, 74% of all fireworks injuries occur within the weeks surrounding the 4th. Surprisingly, the 4th of July has not made a federal holiday until 1870, nearly 100 years after the nation was founded, and it was not a paid federal holiday until 1941. During World War II, the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution spent the duration in Fort Knox, 2 weeks after Pearl Harbor. Both documents were packed in 150 pounds of protective gear and escorted via train by the Secret Service to Louisville. But those who appreciate document edits, after Jefferson wrote the initial draft of the Declaration of Independence, the other members of the draft committee, including Benjamin Franklin, John Adams, Robert Livingston, and Roger Sherman, made 86 changes, including shortening the overall length by more than a fourth. Jefferson was quite unhappy about the edits, particularly the removal of language condemning the British promotion of the slave trade, even though he was a slave owner, and Robert Livingston, though a member of the writing committee, refused to sign the document as he believed it was too soon to declare independence. At the time, Benjamin Franklin proposed that the turkey be named the official national bird in the narrative, but he was overruled by John Adams and Thomas Jefferson, who recommended as a side addition that it be the bald eagle. There were actually 5 references to God in the Declaration of Independence, and the stars on the original flag were in a circle so that all 13 colonies would appear equal. What is probably the most widely held misconception is that the document was actually signed on July 4, 1776. In fact, independence was formally declared on July 2nd of 1776, a day John Adams believed would be, quote, the most important epoch in the history of America, end quote. Only 2 men signed on the 4th, one being the famous John Hancock, with the other 54 signing over the course of several months, not days. Quotes made by the founders surrounding the creation of the document are timeless and certainly quite apropos. Quote, for true patriots to be silent is dangerous, Samuel Adams said. And continuing, Samuel Adams also said, if ever the time should come when vain and aspiring men shall possess the highest seats in government, our country will stand in need of its experienced patriots to prevent its ruin, so said Samuel Adams. And Thomas Jefferson said, the price of freedom is eternal vigilance. So phenomenal. And this was the article written by none other than Bronxville Mayor Mary Marvin Esquire. Brilliant woman, absolutely stupendous in every conceivable way. Intellectually, physically, she's absolutely stunningly beautiful. What can I tell you? That's the way it is. It's a reality. And brilliant, brilliant mind. And her articles are exceptional. Every one, every week. Just amazing, integrity of her work. And you could see that in Bronxville itself. Just absolutely brilliant. brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. Okay, so got to thank her for that. And let me just see if we've got this here. Wanted to see what else we've got here on the local level, which you may find of interest. And here. All right, I think I want you to go here. So I've got stuff written all over the place. Okay. Okay, this is really important. Kyiv said today, the capital of Ukraine, that Ukrainian troops had captured key heights around the eastern city of Bakhmut as it pushes ahead with its counter-offensive. Meanwhile, the Russian attack on a residential area of the frontline town of Orykiv in Ukraine's Zaporizhia region has left at least 4 people dead, 11 injured, the governor there said today. So, that's the bottom line. It's really a monstrous thing that's going on. 1 second here. Lavrov says that the United Nations efforts on the Russian part of the Green Deal have not produced results. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov said on Monday that efforts by the United Nations to ensure the implementation of the Russian part, quote-unquote, of the Black Sea grain export deal had not yet yielded results. Quote, these incredible efforts have not produced any results at all, Lavrov told a press conference after meeting foreign ministers from the Gulf Cooperation Council, the GCC. Moscow has repeatedly said it sees no grounds to extend the grain deal, which enables Ukraine to export cereals from its Black Sea ports beyond July 17th. It argues that commitments made to remove obstacles to Russian food and fertilizer exports have not been fulfilled. So is there such a thing as a just war? Franz Van Katz, Douglas Herbert, or Herbert, unpacks the split within the West over the controversial decision by the United States to send cluster munitions to Ukraine. Herbert points out that 123 countries have signed on to a 15-year-old convention banning them. Quote, these are any weapons, he says. They are bombs that break into small bomblets dispersed over a wide area of the battlefield, clearly in areas where civilians, after the war, will be walking about, and they tend to linger there and can explode years later. Now, Ukraine says it captured key heights around Bakhmut. Kyiv on Monday said that Ukrainian soldiers had captured key heights around the eastern city of Bakhmut as the Western-backed country pushes ahead with its counteroffensive. Quote, during the process of advancing our troops to control of key commanding heights around Bakhmut, so said Deputy Defense Minister Ghana Malyar on Telegram, the online service. NATO is going to drop a major hurdle for Ukrainian membership, but reforms are still needed, the source says. NATO is set to drop a major hurdle to Ukraine's bid for membership in the alliance, a Western official said on Monday. The official who spoke on condition of anonymity advised that the allies, quote, are set, quote, unquote, to drop the membership action plan requirement for Ukraine's application. Quote, the MAP, the membership action plan, is just one of the steps in the NATO accession process. So even with its removal, Ukraine will still need to complete further reforms before, 1 second, I don't know who this is. We'll have to call them later. 1 second, let me just see if we have this here. Okay, not quite sure what that was. Anyway, so Putin's met with the Wagner chief days after the failed mutiny. Seems that the Kremlin said today that President Vladimir Putin had met with Wagner chief Yevgeny Prigozhin on June 29. In the Kremlin, days after the mercenary group attempted to topple Russia's military leadership. The president gave his assessment of the events on June 24. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov said, referring to the failed insurrection, adding that Putin also, quote, listened to accounts given by Wagner commanders, end quote. So during the 3.5-hour meeting in the Kremlin with Wagner commanders, offered Wagner fighter, quote, alternative options for employment, end quote, including in combat roles, Peskov had said. He added that Wagner commanders, quote, stressed that they are staunch supporters of the head of state, meaning Putin, and that they were ready to continue fighting for the motherland. On Thursday, Belarusian leader Alexander Lukashenko, who acted as a mediator in the deal with Wagner, said that neither Prigozhin nor his men were in his country. Then we have an issue about Lithuania, which Lithuania was hit by cyber attacks on NATO on the NATO summit eve. The Lithuania's government said that the country was hit by a wave of cyber attacks on Monday, a day before NATO leaders are due to gather in the Baltic states capital of Vilnius. Quote, as we speak, there are yet more distributed denial of service attacks on our country taking place. Liudas Alisaukas, the head of National Cybersecurity Center, told reporters, a distributed denial of service DDoS attack is designed to overwhelm the target with a flood of internet traffic, preventing the system from functioning normally. The attacks targeted the Vilnius municipality's websites, including tourism information site and a public transport app. The National Cybersecurity Center said it had also received a report on Sunday regarding two other cyber incidents, one of which involved the hacking of the regional radio station. The station's broadcast was interrupted by disinformation targeting NATO and Ukraine. Lithuania will host the NATO summit on Tuesday and Wednesday. So that's tomorrow and the day after. Ukraine says it had captured 14 square kilometers over the past week. Seems that Ukraine today said its forces had recaptured 14 square kilometers from occupying Russian forces in the south and east of the country over the last week. Quote, over 10 square kilometers of Ukrainian land had been recaptured in the south of Ukraine last week, Ukrainian military spokesman Andriy Kovalyov told state media. Quote, in the Bakhmut sector last week, the Ukrainian military liberated 4 square kilometers of territory from the Russian invaders, quote unquote. Kyiv claims to have recaptured a total of 193 square kilometers since launching its counteroffensive a month ago. Now we also find out that Poland says it has detained another Russian spy. Poland has detained another member of a Russian spy network, bringing the total number of people rounded up in an ongoing investigation to 15, the Interior Ministry said today. A hub for Western military supplies to Ukraine, Poland said it has become a major target of Russian spies, and it accuses Moscow of trying to destabilize it. Quote, the Internal Security Agency has detained another member of the spy network working for Russian intelligence, Mariusz Kaminski said in a post on Twitter, quote, the suspect kept surveillance of military facilities and seaports. He was systematically paid by the Russians, end quote. Prosecutors said in a statement that the individual arrested was a Ukrainian citizen who had been in Poland since 2019. If found guilty, he could face up to 10 years in prison. Prosecutors also said that further arrests linked to the investigation cannot be ruled out at this stage. Now, unbelievably so, nearly 50,000 Russian men have died in Ukraine, data suggests. Nearly 50,000 Russian men have died in the war in Ukraine, according to the first independent statistical analysis of Russia's war dead. Independent Russian media outlets, Media Zona and Meduza, worked with a data scientist from Germany's Tübingen University, urging Russian government data to determine the human cost of its invasion of Ukraine. They relied on a statistical concept popularized during the COVID-19 pandemic called excess mortality. Drawing on inheritance records and official mortality data, they estimated how many more men under age 50 died between February 2022 and May of 2023 than in other years. Neither Moscow nor Kyiv give timely data on military losses. Seems like we've got a call, so let's take the caller as it's come in. Good morning, caller. Thanks for waiting. Did you have a comment or a statement of any kind? You just want to listen in? No problem. So we'll let you listen in. And if you have something to say, you can interrupt. Now, several were killed in the Russian attack in Zaporizhia region. It seems that 4 people died and 11 were injured in Russia's bombing of a residential area in the frontline city of Orekhiv in Ukraine's Zaporizhia region. When distribution of humanitarian aid was taking place, the governor of the region said on Monday. Well, Governor Yuri Malashko said that those killed included 3 women and a man, all in their 40s. He added that Russia carried out 36 targeted strikes on 10 settlements of the Zaporizhia region. So Reuters could not independently verify the report. Both sides denied targeting civilians in the 500-day war that Russia has been waging against its neighbor. Now, this is very interesting. Russia's top general, Gerasimov, appeared in the first video since the mutiny. Valery Gerasimov, the chief of the general staff of Russia, or their armed forces, rather, has appeared in a video in which he is seen listening to a report about Ukrainian missile attacks. It is his first public appearance since the Wagner Group's failed June 24 mutiny. The video was made available by the Russian Defense Ministry, which said the footage allowed, or rather showed, Gerasimov participating in a meeting on Sunday. And in the video, the general was sitting in a military command room on a white leather seat, speaking to top generals and giving orders, including to the head of the military intelligence, which is known as GRU. Now, we also find more stuff. The United States and Ukraine's top diplomats are speaking on the phone ahead of the NATO summit. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken and Ukraine's Foreign Minister Dmytro Kuleba said late on Sunday that they held a phone call to discuss this week's NATO summit and Kyiv's counteroffensive campaign to reclaim land taken by Russia. It seems that the U.S. State Department said in a statement that the two diplomats had discussed progress in Ukraine's counteroffensive, and Kuleba said on Twitter that he was that the call was to work out details ahead of the NATO summit, which starts on Tuesday in Vilnius. Russia condemns the United States' decision to send cluster munitions to Ukraine. It seems that the White House has, in effect, confessed to committing war crimes by agreeing to send cluster munitions to Ukraine, the Russian embassy in the United States said in comments published late on Sunday. Quote, we paid attention to White House National Security spokesperson John Kirby's statement about the supply of cluster munitions to Ukraine. The official admitted de facto to committing war crimes by the United States in the Ukrainian conflict, the embassy said on the Telegram messaging app. Both Russia and Ukraine have accused each other of already using cluster munitions in the 500-day war that Moscow has been waging against Kyiv. Well, Ukraine promised last week the munitions that the U.S. decided to ship to Kyiv will not be used in Russia. Okay, let me just see here. This is interesting. The Ukrainian fencing team is likely to miss the Paris 2024 Olympics, says Harlan. Ukrainian athletes boycott over the presence of Russian and Belarusians at the fencing World Championship could cost the country valuable points and jeopardize its qualifications for the 2024 Olympic Games. Ukrainian saber fencer Olga Harlan had said, Ukraine will not take part in the individual events at the World Championships starting on July 22 in Milan, just as they did at last month's Europe Championship after the International Fencing Federation, the FIE, allowed Russia and Belarus fencers to compete as neutrals. Four-time Olympic medalist Halan, a member of the Ukraine Fencing Federation Athletes Commission, said that Russia and Belarus featuring in these tournaments will prevent Ukraine from qualifying for individual events at next year's Games in Paris. Given all the bans, I can't qualify for the Olympics in the individual competition. I need to earn points to get to the Games. I need to participate in all competitions, Halan told Ukrainian news site Tribuna in an interview released on the weekend. Well, let me just see some other things. A key development from Sunday, from yesterday, July 9th, German President Frank-Walter Steinmeier on Sunday said that the country should not block the United States from sending cluster bombs to Ukraine while defending its opposition to the use of the controversial weapon. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky voiced hope for the best, quote, possible result from the upcoming NATO summit, where Kyiv is looking for a green light regarding its bid to join the alliance. Russia's foreign ministry spokeswoman Maria Zakharova said that the leaders of the NATO defense alliance should discuss Ukraine's Zaporizhia nuclear plant at the summit that starts on July 11. That's tomorrow. Let me just see what else we need to point out to you. Bear with me a second here. Okay. All right, I want to go here. Second. Here we are. Bear with me a second. Okay, let me just see. One moment here. Okay. One moment here. One second. This, I think you'll find this really interesting. This is from a militia leader to a refugee. It's the backstory of the man who burned a Quran in Sweden. Soon after the Christian, Iraqi man named Salwan Momika burned a Quran in front of Sweden's largest mosque on June 28, 2023. It was reported that he was a member of the Swedish Ultranationalist Party. Then videos from Momika's past in Iraq started to surface. This footage showed him wearing the uniform of an Iraqi militia with close links to Iran, a militia that has been accused of war crimes. And Momika apparently burned the Quran just a few months after his application for citizenship was denied. A Christian man who immigrated from Iraq to Sweden stomped on a Quran, then burned it on June 28 of 2023 in front of Stockholm's largest mosque on the first day of the Muslim holiday of Eid. Momika had a friend film the whole scene. He also put slices of ham on the Quran. Oh, my God, an act that the Swedish Minister for Foreign Affairs has said amounts to Islamophobia. Momika actually applied for permission to carry out his action with the Swedish authorities, and while the police initially banned him, a judge awarded Momika the right to continue on June 23rd based on Sweden's principles of free speech. Well, Salwan Momika arrived in Sweden in April of 2018. 3 years later, in April of 2021, he received a refugee status, according to information sent to our team by the Swedish Migration Agency, the government body in charge of immigration. Momika had 3-year residency permits set to expire in April of 2024. He lives in the small community of Jelna, or Jelna, I think it's Jelna, south of the capital. Many Muslims reacted in anger to the incident. As a Jew, I react with anger too. There's just absolutely no point, and what is being said here is beyond me. It is their belief and it's their right to have it. Nobody wants to rescind that. I certainly wouldn't. Anyway, Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan threatened once again to block Sweden from being able to join NATO. I guess that's one of his excuses. That's his latest excuse. On Facebook, Monica described himself as an atheist and enlightened politician, thinker, and author, well, self-described. He is active on many social media sites, especially TikTok and Facebook. However, all of his accounts were created after he had refugee status in Sweden. Monica has posted dozens of videos online, often with majority Muslim country names in Arabic as hashtags. This makes it seem likely that he was trying to stir up as much publicity as possible for the Quran burning. However, since the burning, old videos of Monica have resurfaced and been circulating online, especially amongst the Iraqi immigrant and refugee community in Sweden. Our team verified these videos, which show a group of men all wearing black t-shirts, carrying the flag of the Imam Ali Brigadis Iraqi militia with close ties to Iran. So that is the story. In one video, which has been circulating online since June 29, the day after the Quran burning, Monica says that he is the head of a Christian militia within the Brigades of Imam Ali, an organization created in 2014 and accused of war crimes. The original video is unavailable online. However, our team was able to verify this excerpt by seeing two other videos from July 2015 and showing the same scene from a different angle. The first was posted on Facebook by the Faucon des Forces Syriaques, Falcons of the Syriac Forces, a militia and the armed branch of the Syriac Democratic Union Party, which was founded by Monica in 2014. The second is a video report from the Lebanese channel MTV, published on YouTube in July of 2015. Monica ran his armed group in the outskirts of Mosul, the city of Mosul, in 2017. However, he was locked in a power struggle with Rayan al-Haldani, the head of another Christian militia, this one called Babylon. Then he ended up leaving Iraq, according to the Arabic language news site Al-Arabi al-Yadid. The Imam Ali Brigades, whose leader has been under U.S. sanctions since 2018, is one of the many groups operating under the umbrella organization of the Popular Mobilization Forces, a group of militias that had been integrated into the Iraq Army since 2016 with the aim of fighting against the Islamic State Group organization. All of these militias get logistical and financial support from Iran. Well, it seems that videos have circulated online showing members of the Imam Ali Brigades committing atrocities on members of the Islamic State Group organization. When our team contacted the Swedish migration agency, they did not want to tell us why they had given Monica asylum. Our team also contacted Swedish police, who said that they were not able to provide any information because Monica was currently under investigation for, quote, inciting hate, end quote. The website of the Swedish migration agency says that, quote, persons who have committed certain criminal offenses, such as war crimes or other serious crimes, or who pose a threat to the security of Sweden cannot be granted a residence permit, nor can they be granted asylum under Swedish law. While there is no doubt that Monica was part of these militia groups, none of the videos or photos shared online offer proof that he took part in criminal activity. In a video that began circulating on July 3rd of 2023, Monica said that his militia had ongoing tensions with other groups within the Popular Mobilization Forces. In the video, he claimed that he was a victim, quote, of the worst acts of torture, end quote, committed by these other groups. In an interview with Swedish newspaper Expressen, the day after his Quran burning, Monica denied that he had ties to the Popular Mobilization Forces. We reached out to him, but he did not reply to our request for an interview. Now, shortly after his arrival in Sweden, Monica forged links with the Swedish Democrats, a right-wing ultra-nationalist group, according to an internal document at the Swedish embassy in Baghdad, hoping to eventually apply for citizenship. Momika supposedly applied for permanent residency, a necessary step in the naturalization process in Sweden. However, the authorities rejected his request. Authorities said that Momika had been sentenced to community service after having threatened to kill a man while holding a knife. Swedish authorities also considered the evolution of the security situation in someone's home country when making a decision about whether or not to renew someone's temporary residency permit. Momika is set to April of 2024. So in a video posted just hours after setting fire to the Quran, Momika criticized Swedish authorities for not providing him with adequate protection. More recent videos posted by Momika show him inside a hotel room. He denied that his actions constituted a hate crime, but said that he would participate in a tribunal. He also announced his intent to repeat his actions, this time burning the Iraqi flag and the Quran in front of the Iraqi embassy in Stockholm next week. I hope to God he doesn't do that. May the good Lord stop him from doing it. I don't understand the anger against the Quran of all. Unbelievable. Just unbelievable. Oh, God help us. One second. I think we have enough time to forward this to you, which I think you may find interesting. Iran's hijab war continues with business shutdowns and surveillance cameras. In a new move that some Iranians are calling religious apartheid, authorities are refusing services and imposing fines on women who refuse to wear the Islamic headscarf, the hijab. Iran's newly appointed police chief has even announced that surveillance cameras and artificial intelligence will be used to detect women without hijabs and issue penalties. And these are just the latest strategies that Iran's religious authorities are using to try to enforce Islamic dress code laws in Iran after months of protests have broken them down. Iranian women, however, say they've seen little evidence of the crackdown. So over the past month, the Iranian regime has shifted its strategy to increase the pressure on women who refuse to adhere to Islamic dress norms. Authorities are compelling business owners as well as public and private offices to enforce headscarf laws on their premises or risk being shut down. And this strategy is pitting citizens against each other, as one of our observers to Iran told us, instead of relying on a notorious morality police enforce the hijab law on the streets. So this is really frightening. Reports emerge daily of restaurants, cafes, malls, pharmacies, and other establishments across Iran being shut down for failing to comply with hijab regulations. And with the arrival of warmer weather, the struggle between Iranian women and Iranian authorities is expected to escalate. Iran's newly appointed chief of police, Ahmad Reza Ghadan, who has been sanctioned by the West for human rights abuses during 2009 protests in Iran, issued a threat that failing to adhere to hijab regulations starting on April 15 would not be tolerated. Well, still videos shared online show that Iranian women fearlessly going out in public without headscarves. And it seems that authorities are trying to turn shopkeepers against people, but they won't succeed. So it's unlikely there is such a pushback. People will boycott any shop that asks us to wear a hijab. So this is the sort of pushback that we're getting, and we'll see where it goes. Just fascinating that this is happening. Anyway, I guess it's up to the Iranian people to decide which way they want to go, whether they want to listen to government or they want to allow those people who want to abide by the tenets of Islam upon that community, or they don't want to, can or should be their right. I guess that's a societal concern and a societal issue. But the government there religiously focused is the one that instituted these regulations that demanded women wear the hijab with no one getting an excuse not to be able to do so. Anyway, so that's the story. And one second. Let me just see what else we've got going on here. I think we're really fine. One second. Okay. Well, there's going to be another problem, unfortunately. Rescuers have spotted a boat possibly carrying 200 people off the Canary Islands. Seems that Spain's Coast Guard said today that one of its rescue planes, which has been searching for a missing migrant boat, had spotted a vessel possibly carrying around 200 people off the Canary Islands. The plane has found a boat, and it is possibly the one we were looking for because from the air, it could have around 200 people on board. A spokesman for the Salvamento Marítimo Coast Guard Service advised Salvamento had deployed a rescue vessel to reach the boat, which was spotted about 71 nautical miles off Gran Canaria, the main island, and would reach them within the hour, she said. It's very likely it is the same boat that we've been looking for, she said, referring to a boat which the Coast Guard had earlier said had left Senegal with around 200 people on board. Elena Moreno, the head of the Spanish non-governmental organization Caminando Fronteras, that helps boats in distress, confirmed that a boat had left the southern town of Cafuntín on June 27 with approximately 200 people on board. There are many minors on board, she said in an audio message. The families told us about the disappearance of the boat, saying that they had no news for several days. Cafuntín is a fishing village in the southern part of Senegal, which lies at least over 1,000 miles south of Spain's Canary Islands. She said the non-governmental organization had also been alerted about two other boats also missing at sea after leaving Senegal. Two of them set sail for Mbour in Senegal, one carrying between 50 and 60 people and the other 65 people, she said, referring to a town about 50 miles south of the capital of Dakar. Senegal, which has long had a reputation for stability, recently experienced its worst political turmoil in years after its opposition leader was jailed by a court on June 1st, prompting a flare-up of deadly violence. Officials put the death toll at 16, but Amnesty International gave a higher figure of 24, while the opposition said that 30 people had lost their lives. Tensions eased on July 3rd after President Macky Sall agreed he would not stand for re-election. Tensions eased on July 3rd after that, and the Atlantic route to the Canaries is particularly dangerous due to the strong currents and with migrants traveling in overloaded boats, which are often unseaworthy without enough drinking water. Many of these boats leave from ports in Morocco, Western Sahara, or Mauritania, but they also come from countries further south such as Senegal. According to figures released by Caminando last week, a total of 778 people died while trying to reach Spain's Canary Islands by boat in the first half of 2023. 778 people. Figures for the same period by the International Organization on Migration gave a figure of 126 dead. Well, Spain has long been a key entry point for migrants seeking a better life in Europe, but the number of Atlantic crossings began surging in late 2019 after increased patrols along Europe's southern coast dramatically reduced Mediterranean crossings. In the first 6 months of this year, a total of 7,218 migrants reached the Canary Islands by boat. That figure is nearly 20% lower than the 8,853 that arrived in the same period a year earlier, Interior Ministry figures show. Unbelievable. Literally unbelievable. So it goes. Well, that's the end of our time with you today. thank you for being with us, as always. Always a pleasure. And we wish you a great weekend, a great week, rather. Tomorrow's another day. And we'll see what we've got scheduled for tomorrow. We'll post it on the YonkersTribune.com website, and hopefully you'll join us then. Be well, and goodbye.